I went backpacking for 6 months with my girlfriend. We went to Hawaii, and then we went down all the way, all through New Zealand and Australia. I went to the Fiji Islands and Western Samoa. And everywhere I went, I met AA people. And I hitchhiked 3,500 miles in New Zealand. My girlfriend and I hitchhiked 3,500 miles in New Zealand. In every town I went into, I called the AA and went to the meeting. And it was a pretty wonderful experience. But when I came back from this trip, I asked the girl to marry me. And I couldn't believe it. She said no. Can you believe that? And we broke up, and I was devastated. I was totally, completely, 100% in the dumps, as some of us may know. Some of us have experienced that kind of thing with the opposite sex. Not everyone, but most of us. So what happened at that time? I moved in with my sponsor, who at that time I was sober, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. The years are not that important, but I guess I was sober 6 years. And at this time, my friend Don was sober about 3 or 4 years. And Don had a little situation with his girlfriend. He was walking in the dunes in Truro with, the girl was just a sweetheart. And for some reason, Donnie got a little angry. I hope he won't mind me telling this part of his story, but he wound up trying to choke his girlfriend in sobriety. And he was totally amazed that this happened. How could it happen to him? He hadn't been drinking. Why was he like this? And so Donnie picked up the big book and went by the numbers, word for word. He took the book out and he read it, and when it said to do something, he did it. And he was living with me at this time. And of course, I was kind of paying attention, but not really. I mean, I didn't care about the big book or what Donnie was doing that much, although he was a friend of mine. So Donnie went through this, and I saw this wonderful transformation take place in Don. And I was kind of scratching my head now. I'm kind of watching it. And then Donnie had a friend, Chris, who broke down a door in an apartment in an attempt to communicate with his girlfriend. And, and Chris wound up with handcuffs on that night. And so Chris called Don and said, "Don, can you help me?" And Don said, "You know," he said, "I've just been going through the book. This is over a course of time." He said, "I'll help you." He said, "And what's helped me a lot is doing these steps." So he said, "Why don't you do the steps?" He said, "I'll show you what I did, and we'll work together, and we'll go by the numbers, word for word, and we'll do the steps." So Chris said, "Okay," with the handcuffs on, what was he going to say? So Chris went through the steps, and Chris had a monumental four-step notebooks like this. He had a lot of work. He did a lot of work. He was desperate. He wrote like a madman every day. And then Donnie heard his fifth step. And then there was another guy that came into the picture that Donnie worked with. Now there were three. And then there was another heroin addict that arrived with a broken wrist and no license. He'd smashed his Harley. And so now there were three or four of them. And Chris, we had a meeting. We decided we would have a meeting. We were just going to do a meeting on the fifth chapter. This was in February of 1980, I believe. We were just going to do a meeting on the fifth chapter. And the way we were going to run it, I wasn't running it, but the way it was run was we took the book out and we were going to start with the word rarely. Rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly followed our path. And we were going to read, and when someone didn't understand something, we would stop and discuss it and make sure everybody understood it. So there was Donnie, and there was Vinny was a pilot. We met in his trailer out at the airport. And there was another pilot, and this Bill S. and Chris. And we read And somebody said, really? And someone went, whoa, hold it. And the first meeting was on the word really. We talked for an hour and a half on the word really. So it kind of died off for a while. And then then Chris said, he went into the hangar and he got a room. Chris said, well, Don, why don't you start a meeting? We'll have a meeting where we meet and we'll learn to do the steps this way. And Donnie said, I'm not starting it. He said, why don't you start it? So Chris went into the airport, and in one of the hangars, he got a room, and the meeting started. And at that time, I was working on Thursday nights. I wasn't able to attend the meeting. I never went. It only met for a couple of weeks in the hangar, and I didn't go to the meeting. And then we got a room at Cape Cod Community College in Hyannis. And that's when I started going to the meeting. And there were about six or eight people at the meeting. And the way we used to run it, I remember at that time we were kind of fighting. It's funny, when you read that preamble, that's the preamble that was written about that time. And it's really kind of funny because I was always like a dissenting voice in the group. I mean, I wanted part of that taken out. I said it was, you know, and I think if seven people voted, there was 6-4 and me and against, you know. So they kept it, they kept the format. And at first I thought, that's baloney, but recently I've really come to believe that it's important to, I don't know why, maintain the format. And so we've always read that format in Hyannis. Anyway, to go on with this, now I hadn't started writing the fourth step. Remember now I was 1, 2, and I had all kinds of moral inventories. I had the Hazelden Guide. I had the 12 and 12, you know, using the seven deadlies. I tried doing a history of my life, you know, like a narrative type fourth step. I had all these types of fourth steps, and then I gave away part of one of those one time as a fifth step, and I never really went on in the steps, even though I was sober at this time, 6.5 years or whatever it was. And so I was doing another one of these moral inventories. I don't know what the heck method I was using at the time. And I saw my friend Donnie at the meeting, and I said, Don, I'm doing a fourth step, you know. And he said, are you doing it the way the big book lays it out? And I said, no, not really. And he turned around and walked away from me. And I got so mad at him. I got so much anger and resentment toward him. I wanted to run after him and strangle him. And then I thought, those guys all think they're better than me. What do they think? Who do they think they are? I'm sober 6.5 years. Donnie's sober 4 years. Chris is only sober a year. Billy's sober a year. Who do those guys think they are trying to tell me, you know? So I went on in my turmoil, in my darkness, in my hatred, you know. I was full of resentment, really. And I went back to Donnie. I said, Donnie, will you help me? I said, Donnie, will you help me to write a fourth step? He said, well, he said, if you get that far, but he said, if I work with you, we're going to start with step one. We're going to start at the beginning. I said, Donnie, I'm 6.5 years sober. I know what's going on. We're going to go by the book. We're going to start with one, and we're going to follow through. I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I wound up getting on, after I read the book, after he read that we discussed the three pertinent ideas, A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, B, that no human power could relieve our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he was sought. After he was sure that I was there, we got on our knees and did a third step together. We did the third step prayer out of the big book. First, he read it, then I read it, then we had a moment's meditation. We got off our knees. I took the third step. And I got up and I said, I don't really remember taking my third step, but I remember getting off my knees and standing up and going, okay, Don, what's God's will for me now? Like, you know, Mr. Smart Guy. And he picked up a pen and a notebook and he goes, you'll find out in 4 through 12. And he said, now we're going to do a fourth step, a moral inventory, the way it's laid out in the big book. And I really didn't know anything about it. So I said, okay. So he said, you know, first, we listed people, principles, and institutions with whom we're angry. We did the reading. He asked me to go. He asked me to spend 2 hours a day, every other night, and when I didn't write, I was to go to a meeting the night I wasn't writing. So I said, okay, Don, and I didn't do anything like that. I didn't spend 2 hours a day. I would write like crazy for a while, and then I didn't write for a week at a time. And I wouldn't suggest anyone do it the way I did it, but at the beginning of the meeting, I told you I'd try to tell the truth, so that's what I did. And when I was going great, when I had the girlfriend, you know, and everything was going fine for me, I didn't think I needed to write. But when the girlfriend dumped me and I was in the pits, then I wrote like a madman. And that's the way I got my, I was back and forth with this girl. Not the one that I traveled with, but that's, God's been good to me. He sent women into my life when he wants me to get me to do things. So you apply a little pain. And it seems like I spent a lot of time on the rack, you know. But anyway, after I went back, I was very proud of myself. Okay, I got my list of people, principals, and institutions with whom I thought I was through. Then he said, no, let's think and see what it says to do next. And we went to that diagram, I think it's around page 60, where it says the cause and effects. So the first person on my list was my father. So we went to the diagram on that. It says, you know, I'm resentful at Jones. His attention to my wife affects my personal relations, sex relations, ambitions, pride. Well, I took my father and I said, I'm resentful at Dad. What was the cause? He didn't pay enough attention to me. What did it affect? It affected my personal relations, my self-esteem, my sex relations, pocketbook, whatever it was, the ambitions. I wrote that out. And when this happened, I went back, I started writing a narrative, you know. I wrote this big long deal about my father. He says, notice the sentences. There's no more than 8 words in the sentence. He said, I want short, concise, to the point sentences. What caused you to hate your father? What caused you to resent your father? I didn't hate my father, but what caused me to resent my father? So we went through that. So I took each person, each principal, each institution, and I did the cause and effects, and I went back and I said, Don, I'm done. It was kind of fun. I was looking at the wrong people did me. I was looking at what everybody did to, you know, make me mad. I thought, this isn't too bad. I can handle this, you know? And so I went back to Don. I gave him the list. I said, there you go, Don. I'm finished. And he said, let's look and see what it says to do next. And if you turn the page, it says, we're prepared to look at it from a different angle. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And so I went back and said, I'm resentful of my father, didn't pay enough attention to me, affects my ba 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 ba. Okay, where was I selfish? I wanted all my father had 7 kids. He worked 100 hours a week. I wanted all my father's attention. I wanted him to focus on me. I wanted him to be with me. Was it right? I don't know. Maybe it is right. Maybe it's wrong. Whether it's right or wrong, it's selfish. So that's how I was selfish. Where was I dishonest? I didn't look at the situation. I didn't understand that my father had a lot to do. You know, I only knew that he wasn't paying attention to me. Where was I self-seeking? I acted like a fool trying to get his attention. What did I do to try to get his attention, you know, so that I would get all the attention? Where was I afraid? I was afraid that he didn't love me. I was afraid that I wasn't going to get the attention that I needed. So I did that with each person, principal, and institution. I turned him around. And I went back and said, Don, I'm finished. Let's do the 5th step. And he goes, no, let's see what it says next. And I went on and did a fear inventory, reviewed my fears. Self-reliance failed me. That's what I found out. I found out the reason that I had fear was I was running the show. I was directing the show. I was trying to get everybody to act the way I wanted them to so that I would be happy. And it never worked. And I always wound up in fear. That's why I was fearful, because I was selfish. Because I thought I had to have things my way to be happy. I did the fear. And then my sex inventory. I answered the questions that were asked in my sex inventory. I wrote down the names of the people that I had been involved with. And that didn't necessarily mean people that I had slept with. I went back at my first girlfriend. People that I had dates with. People that, you know, had any kind of a relationship with. And I put them on the list and I answered the questions. You know, where was I selfish, dishonest? Where did I cause jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? Who did I hurt? What should I have done instead? I wrote it all out, and it was an eye-opener. It was an eye-opener to find out. It's really something, when I spoke with my sponsor, I said, I'm finished. He said, you're going to have to do one more thing. You're going to have to write out a sexual ideal. And I wrote a Dear God letter. Dear God, in my future sex relations, these are the things I want. Instead of being selfish, I want to be giving. Instead of being dishonest, I want to be honest. Instead of being self-seeking, I want to think of others. And instead of being frightened, I want to be, you know, all the things that I had discussed. That isn't exactly what I wrote, but all the things that I found in my fourth step, I took some time and I wrote out an idea, something that I can grow toward in future relations. So when I handed him that, he said, yeah, you are finished. He said, you did a good job, too. I said, thanks, you know. And it took a long time. It was a lot of work. And then I read it to, I read my fifth step to him, and there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, mundane, repetitive baloney in that fifth step, but there was some things in there that had been bothering me for a long time, stuff that had been eating at me, and I got it all out. I got it all out, and then I went home, and I did what the book says. I took an hour and reviewed what I had done, and then I thanked God from the bottom of my heart that I at last knew him. And I said the sixth and seventh step prayer. And it says, we have then completed step seven, 1 hour after the fifth. I completed step seven. And then I took my fourth step and I went out and I made a list of people that I owed amends to. And I went out and repaired the damage that I had done. I went to people that I had walked all over. And it wasn't easy. I never forget, I worked in the supermarket, and I was, I worked for this particular manager that I didn't get along with, and my father was also in the company. My father was a big, my boss had to report to my father, and I didn't like him. So I had a chance to kind of get old Fred, and over the years I did. And I had to go to Fred and tell him that I'd badmouthed him and I hurt his career and that I'd been a jerk to him. And at this time, I was no longer working for Fred when I went to him and told him. And he wanted to know what I said and when I said it and why I said it. And it was a tough conversation. And I was wrong to do those things to Fred. And it was funny. He was working in Hyannis and I was working in Yarmouth at the time. And 2 weeks later, Fred was transferred to Dennisport, and I was transferred to Dennisport. And I had to work for Fred again. So I had a chance to make amends to Fred. And I could tell a lot of stories about amends. I made a lot of amends. I sat down and frankly analyzed the past with my family, went over all the crap. You know, some of my brothers and sisters were like, hey, save it. You know, I don't have time to just listen to me. I want to get this out. And I had the conversation with each member of my family. And I went to, you know, former employers, and I went to all, I went to my sister-in-law, and really tough for men, really. But I got them all done. Not all of them, but I got a big portion of my amends done. I don't think I'll ever finish all of them. So anyway, there I was. And today, my program, I believe it's a matter of working on my amends, doing step 10, and for a long time, I have to admit, I got stuck in step 4. But there are very specific instructions on what to do on a daily basis in step 10, 11, and 12. And what can I say? In the meantime, the group was getting bigger. Not much, though. We for a long time, it's funny, we were the most hated group in Hyannis. And people, now I had a little bit of respect around the route because I had been sober for, by now I had been sober for 8 years, and 8 or 9 years, and the group had been going for a couple of years. And people used to come up to me and they, you know, there'd be a group here and a group here. The meetings were a little bit bigger on the Cape, and there'd be these groups, and I'd be in one group and someone would sneak over to me and give me a little elbow and go, you go to that Hyannis group? And I'd go, yeah. And they'd say, well, doesn't so-and-so go in there, and isn't he a jerk? And I go, yeah, so-and-so goes there, and yeah, he is a jerk. But he said, well, don't they have all really strict rules, and isn't it like kind of what used to call us Nazi AA, the body snatchers? That's what they call this, because a lot of retreads, a lot of people that would pick up after 8 or 10 years would come back to that group looking for help. What could they do that they didn't do before? A lot of people that were unhappy in their sobriety, that were breaking down doors, and were a lot of people that were around the program for years and years and years, couldn't get sober, would come to that group. But only the desperate would come, you know? Nobody was coming for the social deal. You know what I mean? It wasn't the place to be. As a matter of fact, a lot of people in AA were saying, stay away from there. Stay away. We had a woman, the woman's group started up, and the woman was like a saint in AA. She was 33 years sober. And this girl had finished her fifth step. She was 9 months sober, and she was chairing the meeting. And this woman, it's funny, Harry knows the woman, she moved to Florida and lived in the same town as Harry. Wonderful, wonderful person, great lady. And she spoke at the meeting, and the chairperson said, Donna, her name was Donna, said, excuse me, she said, have you done the steps as they've laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous? And the woman said, well, no, not exactly this way. She said, I'm going to have to ask you to pass. And there was like this silence that went over the room, and the word spread like wildfire in Hyannis, and everybody said, stay away from there. They wouldn't let so-and-so speak. It was like, oh my God, they wouldn't let her speak, you know? But the meeting stayed small for a long time. It did, it stayed very small. There were 6, 8, 10, in the 70s, you know, in the 80s, for the first 5 years of the meeting, there were only 10 people, 12 people, 15 people. And then, all of a sudden, it exploded. We had 150 people at the men's big book step study. We had this guy, John, who you know that you mentioned moved to Connecticut, drove from Worcester to Hyannis every Thursday night. 100 miles one way, every Thursday night. We had people coming from all over to learn how to do the steps. And next thing you know, somebody started a meeting, another meeting came up, and another meeting came up, and it was like, we didn't do this to start meetings, I shouldn't say we, I really wasn't one of them, but the people who started the meeting, Donnie, Chris, Billy, they weren't interested in what anyone else was doing. They didn't care. They didn't care. All they knew was their ass was on fire, and they needed to have it put out. And that's how things got going, and that's why people were drawn to the meeting. The same type of people went there. People who had no place else to go, had tried everything, couldn't get sober, had enough, fed up with their own behavior, they came. And all of a sudden, people started seeing those people getting better, and they went, whoa, something's going on over there. Let's go. Let's see what this is about. And it just grew. And then, what did I do? In 1985, I quit my job. And I had been working in the supermarket for, I think, 12 years. And I was sober for 12 years. 11 years. I guess I was sober 11 years at that time. And I walked in and I quit. And I was the assistant manager. And I said, I'm giving my notice. And I said, what? He said, what are you gonna do? I said, I don't know. I said, I can't do this anymore though. I don't like it. And he said, well, you can't. And then I asked everybody in AA, of course, I ran around and said, what do you think I should do? And everybody said, don't quit a job until you have another job to go to. Don't quit a job until you have another job to go to. And then one day I said, no, that's it. I've had it. I'm done. And I walked in and I gave my notice. And I left and I walked outside and I went, what did I do? What have I done now? I got no job, you know? And so I was without a job for a few months. And I went for a walk on the golf course. This would be September of 85. And I ran into a golf pro I knew up here. They were building the golf course. And he said, we're going to open for a month. Are you interested in coming to work here? I said, yeah. I said, I don't have a job. I just don't have a job for a month. So I started out as a ranger and a cashier. And then the golf course closed. They were getting ready for the winter again. And he said, would you like to come back? No, I said to him, can I come back in the spring and be your assistant? He said, yeah, sure. So I got an old Volkswagen. I sold my good car and I bought an old Volkswagen. And I geared down my expenses and I threw all my stuff in the car and I took off for Florida. And I said, I'm driving to Florida. I'll never forget it. I'm driving to Florida in this old Volkswagen. My brother lived in Baltimore, so I stopped in Baltimore to see my brother. He lived up on this hill. And I went out at 4 o'clock in the morning and got in my Volkswagen. It wouldn't start. I said, shit, now my car won't start. You know, what am I doing here? So I was freaking out. I pushed the Volkswagen down the hill. I ran out and jumped in the car and jump started. It started. And I said, that's it. I can't shut it off until I get to Florida. This is in Baltimore, right? So I'm driving in North Carolina on Route 95. And I'm so afraid that I'm singing to God the whole way. I'm like, God, please remove the fear. Direct your attention to what you would have me be. Bring someone into my life I can help. You know, I'm driving along. I kind of blah, 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 blah. In North Carolina, a guy I know from the Cape swerved, almost hit me. Swerved back and back again. The guy is hammered. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And I says, Jesus, that's Jeff, and he is drunk. So I toot the horn. I said, Jeff, pull over. Pull over. So we pulled over. He said, look, he said, I just came out of Atlantic City, lost all his money betting, and he was drunk. And I said, let's go to Florida together. He said, my car's not working too good. So I said, you can make sure I get there, and if we run out of money, I said, I'll loan you some money. So we went to Florida. And I got Jeff down to Palm Beach. God sent me someone to help that day. It was unbelievable. I don't know how that happened. And I got down to Palm Beach. I got Jeff started in AA. He started going to AA meetings. And I went back up. For some reason, I went back up to Daytona. And I met Harry this is now, I guess, December of 85. I met Harry at the Almas Club. And I don't really remember exactly how it happened, but I went in there and there was another guy, John, and he was doing his cause and effects. He was sitting at one of the booths in the old Almas Club and he was writing out, I'm resentful at cause, da-da-da, affects my, and I kind of walked by and I look and I go, oh my God, the guy's writing a fourth and he's doing a good job. I said, I can't believe this. I've never seen anyone do this, anyone else. So I kind of went out and said, hey, John, what are you doing? I didn't know him. I said, hey, what are you doing? I'm writing my fourth. My name's John, blah, blah. So he said, I don't know exactly what to do. I said, well, we got a group that I've been doing up north that I've been working with, and the group has a format and a way of doing it. I said, if you want, I said, I'll show you what we do, how we look at it. He said, I love that. He said, I need some help, you know. So I started working with John, and Harry came over and looked over in the booth, and he says, what are you guys doing? You know? So Harry and then Suzanne and another guy, a bunch of us, Chuck and Paul, we all got a little group down there, and people were like, don't go near those people, stay away from those people. Oh, it's funny. And then Harry said, let's start a meeting. Harry said, why don't you start a meeting to me? I go, yeah, the guy from up north starting a new format meeting, that'll be great, Harry, everybody will come. So you start the meeting, you're a local guy. So Harry started an AA meeting with the same format, and that's how Harry and I met. And it was great for me. After Harry put me up, I stayed with Harry, and then I finally got a place to stay above the golf course. I think that was the same year. I got a place to stay. I got a place for $370 a week. And it included all the golf, no, $370 a month, and included all the golf I wanted to play. I was like, what? This, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, I guess you got to be a golfer to really appreciate that. But plus, it was a cheap restaurant downstairs. So I was like in heaven. So I played golf every single day. I hooked up with Harry. I had guys to work with. I was going to AA meetings and met Jim. Remember Jim? Met Jim at the race track. Met him, he had puke on his shirt. He was like real low bottom guy. We hung out constantly, Jim and I. God, but anyway, I got back into the golf business. I got into the golf business, and I've been working at that club. I just got promoted this year to head pro at a nice resort up on Cape Cod, and it's a wonderful job, wonderful staff. They gave me all my education. I can play pretty good now. There's about 75 golf pros on Cape Cod, and I love golf. There's probably 35 of them will beat me on a regular basis, so I'm just your average, you know, beat it around kind of guy. But anyway, Harry, we've been friends every winter. I've gone down to Florida, and when Harry was still in Florida, we spent a lot of time together, and we work with people and been involved in the process. And I don't know, it's been, you know, the whole big book thing. I mean, I told Donnie, everybody that has done it through this format, if they trace their sponsors back and trace their sponsors back and trace their sponsors back, they come to Donnie, you know. And Donnie stays away from it all. I'll say, this is the guy that started the Hyannis Group. Oh no, he says, Chris started it. I didn't really start it, you know. He's very humble, kind of good guy. But Donnie and I traveled when I lived there for years, we traveled to a meeting almost every night, and Donnie lived with me. My house has been, Donnie lived with me for a while. God send me, you know this, you know they say, stay away from newcomers in AA. I got hooked up with a newcomer in AA one time, and we were going to get married. We built a house together. So naturally, it blew up at the last minute. I think the invitations were out. I know the invitations were out. But anyway, I wound up in a half-finished house. And again, praying to God, God help me, blah, blah, blah. So I got one guy comes along. He needs to get involved in the steps. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you let me stay upstairs. And he said, I'll write my fourth and I'll finish her upstairs for you. He was a builder. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, So that was Greg. Greg lived at my house, and then Donnie lived, after Greg was gone, Donnie lived there, and Lucky, and my sister, and another woman that started a group in Florida. Everybody lived at my house at one time or another. And they all wrote their four steps and did their fifth steps, and it's a good thing that the walls can't talk, because there's been a lot of secrets in that house. So I don't know, I feel really blessed, you know, to be a part of the Big Book Step Study group and to see it grow. I don't know how it grew to 100 meetings, really. It's funny, it seems like a lot of people in the groups kind of know each other and are involved in the other groups and that kind of thing. But in Hyannis, you know, I mean, there's 100 groups, and there's probably like 75 in the Boston area. And I'll bet you, in the other 75 groups, I bet you there aren't 5 people who know Donnie. Or, you know, it's like the whole thing was, it just kind of happened because one guy beat up his girlfriend, and he couldn't believe it. You know, he was 2 years sober, and he couldn't believe he was acting that way. Going to AA meetings, not drinking, asking God to help, but turning into an idiot, you know. And so he picked up the book and worked with one guy. And those guys worked with guys, and those guys worked with guys. And it's funny, we always started the meeting at 7:30. All the meetings in our area at the time started at 8:30. And so we had a lot of people leave the meetings. They'd come in. We had people come in with the idea that they were going to disrupt the meeting because they didn't like our format, because it's not AA. You can't tell people what to do. You can't keep people from sharing. You can't, I mean, we had fist fights over it. We had people come to the meeting to purposely disrupt it. So we decided we would start the meeting at 7:30, so we could get all the baloney out of the way in case anybody wanted to go to another meeting. They still have, somebody said, we don't like your format, we'd always say, there's a meeting at 8:30 in Dennis. You don't like it, we'll help you get there. We'll give you a ride if you don't like our meeting. But we start early for that purpose. If you don't like it, don't come here. That's all. Don't tell us what we can and can do, though, you know. So the meeting was really, you know, we've got a lot of really, really good, I think we have a lot of really good sobriety there. And basically, personally, I really feel like there's really only one reason that I'm sober, and it's the grace of God. It's not because I'm bright or I was smart enough to figure out what I needed to do or any of that. There's only one reason, and it's the grace of God. And I can be drunk tonight, just like that. And I don't, there's a lot of things that I personally believe, and this is where I maybe will get into a little bit of opinion. So, you know, you can take, I mean, my opinion is probably as good as anyone else's. But I really believe that the whole message of Alcoholics Anonymous is rely on God. That's it. You can sum it up in three words. That's what this book is about. That's what the steps are about. Rely on God. And if you don't know how to do it, the 12 steps is a method to show you exactly how. I have no question in my mind about what to do with any one of the 12 steps, about what I'm supposed to do. There's never any problem about knowing, being confused about the steps. I know what to do, and when I'm in enough pain, I usually pick up the book and do what I'm supposed to do. It's not about getting well. I don't think I've ever seen anyone get well. I've seen a lot of people stay sober. And I don't personally think that our group is really, or any other big book group, is any more special than any other group. We had people in our group jump off the canal bridge and hang themselves and overdose, just like every other group in AA. And I don't think it's any different than any other kind of AA. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. Personally, for the last 20 years, the only book that I've used for my sobriety is Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever I have a problem, I go back to the book and find out what I need to do. I call my sponsor up. I call Don.